Welcome to Connectify Conversations. My name is Sean Topshi, and I'm the Director of Business Development at Connectify. Our mission is to share the experience, expertise, and insights from gaming industry leaders that comes from years of navigating the complexities and impact of compliance. On this episode, I am joined by special guest.
My name is Joseph Martin. I am the CEO of Connectify.
My name is Daniel Umfleet. I'm the founder and CEO of Kindbridge Behavioral Health and the vice chair of Kindbridge Research Institute.
Thanks for joining us today. And remember to like and subscribe to the podcast. You can also learn more anytime at Connectify.com. That's KINECTIFY.com. Dan, thank you so much for coming. I'm really excited to have this conversation.
Yeah, no problem, man. I'm happy to be here.
For those that don't know you, why don't you give us a little background on yourself and what your specific interest is and a little bit about Kindbridge as well?
Sure. So I'm the founder and CEO of Kindbridge Behavioral Health and the vice chair of Kindbridge Research Institute. So two distinctly different organizations that focus primarily at the core on getting better healthcare options to individuals that are suffering from gambling related harms. One is a charitable organization, which is the Research Institute, that conducts research on a variety of different topics, including veterans and how they're impacted by problem gambling, and population health style strategy projects for regulators, which go through the landscape of a state and map out all of the access points that an individual may have and all of the necessary trainings required to saturate the state with resources and build a healthy workforce that can satisfy any sort of uptick in demand and recognize and screen for gambling harms. The clinic, which is behavioral health, is a growing workforce that has got over 50 specialists in it that are trained to work with problem gamblers that need access to better mental health options with people that understand them. And it also works on direct technologies that can be integrated into solutions such as Connectify that'll make it easier for operators to deploy access to care at point of consumption and as soon as an individual presents through the customer service platform. So in a nutshell, that's what Kindbridge and Kindbridge Research Institute are about. I got into this, I'll try to keep it brief, but it's an interesting story. I got into this field, what would have been 6 years ago now, and it was really by accident. It was just strangely falling into this topic. My missus was pregnant with our second child, and we needed to take a step back from me traveling so much because the pregnancy had some complications. And at the time, I was up in the North Sea in Aberdeen in Scotland, working for BP, doing a consulting gig, and I needed to stop traveling so much. And we owned some cafes here in Southampton where we live. And on the weekends, I would come home and there would be a group of guys who would be sitting around at a table and they would ask me a ton of questions. And it was questions that I had no idea what they were talking about because they kept asking me questions about regulatory technologies and how to build product that would stop individuals with a gambling problem from gaining access to websites. And I was intrigued by the topic. And so I happily engaged with them and had conversations. And when I needed to wrap up in Aberdeen, I called them and said, what do you guys have? Because we talked about working in the past, and I went to work for what's now Gamban, which is a blocking software that's based out of the UK, but has gone worldwide, and helped them get the product off of the ground and a little bit more visibility outside of the UK and build their reputation as a reg tech firm that really does have some prestige behind it, which is nice. I was exposed immediately working with that group to problem gambling and all of the sort of underbelly of what goes on globally across industry and on this topic and what doesn't and what public health systems are taking it more seriously and what public health systems are not, and where does it present and which demographics does it more commonly harm than others and which does it not. And I got this sort of baptism by fire of what this does in the public health space. And prior to me doing oil and gas consulting, I was a healthcare consultant over in the US. And so a passion of mine that sort of underpins all of this is helping health systems build better access pathways to more customers that need access to the right kind of care in their community. So doing a lot of community-based health system work and health system design is a background of mine and a passion. And somehow, when everything flipped switch in 2018 over in the US, I went, it's time we are going to have to do something, because I'd done several recon missions over to the US to look at the infrastructure, anticipating that there would be a problem farther down the line as state by state started to legalize sports betting and iGaming was looked at. And the thing with the states is it's very fragmented. There's 50 of them plus some territories and a district, right? All of them think individually and not a lot of them are doing a whole lot of thinking at a national level. And when you go state by state and start to pick apart what the infrastructure looks like to provide treatment access to these folks, you get a mixed match, and some states are better than others and some states have absolutely nothing, while other states that don't need as much have more than everyone else. So it's a real sort of lopsided game when it comes to this and you're looking across the country. So we decided to start Kindbridge Behavioral Health in September of 2020, of course, right at the height of the pandemic when telehealth was really starting to take off and investors were really putting their dollars into what would inevitably be somewhere around 20 to 25% of care delivery will be done via tele in the United States now, with disease blending it into a variety of different disease types and blending it into a variety of different treatment types so that tele gets you access to everything. So we started building a tele system. And it's really just been a crazy ride since then.
I appreciate that detailed depth and introduction into both yourself, your passion, and what Kindbridge is doing. One, I love your guys' mission, and I really want to get into some of what you started talking about with the better access pathways, because I think that ease of access is such an important part of it. But before we jump into all that, there's probably something that we should tackle right off the get-go to really tee up this conversation. And we've talked about this a couple times now, but I want to address responsible gaming as an industry term versus how you're really approaching customer care and treatment, where there may be somewhat of a disconnect between those.
Yeah, I think like a really easy way to think about the term responsible gambling or responsible gaming, depending on which jurisdiction you're in, it's something we all know because we work on the problem. It's something we all know because it hits the headlines and it's important to us for a variety of reasons. The thing is, it doesn't really translate all that well when it comes to individuals who are actually reaching out for care. There's a real lack of understanding on what that term means. I think if you roll up your view of what responsible anything means, you're probably going to draw a connection to drink responsibly or those campaigns, right? And like, those have been really well integrated into society, and it's taken loads of iterations of ad campaigns over a really long period of time to drill it into our head that we're not supposed to drive drunk and use a sober driver. And drinking responsibly basically means holding yourself accountable and not going over the edge type thing. We're not there in the way that advertising campaigns for problem gambling or awareness campaigns are. It's not getting the same kind of penetration out in the public to get people thinking, oh, gambling responsibly means X, and I need to think about my actions when I'm doing this like this. And a lot of times you get folks who are talking about what does gambling responsibly even mean? What kind of term even is that? How am I going to gamble? What does that mean? Tell me, give me a definition. What does that mean? You get challenged sometimes when you're in group and you start asking questions around what does this mean to you? Like a lot of them, they've never even heard the terms. And they, this sort of brings into a bigger conversation, right? When you talk to them, what do folks that are in treatment or going through a recovery journey, what do they talk about right now? What are hot topics? hot topics are very much, I'm completely inundated with advertising campaigns. I am bombarded 24/7 around the clock. They're in my inbox. They're in my text message stream. They're on my TV. They're in my baseball game. I got in-game announcements going, explaining to me what the lines are. I can't watch sport without hearing about it. I can't open my email without hearing about it. I can't turn on the radio without hearing about it. It's absolutely everywhere. And then when you say, all right, have you seen any of the Play Responsibly campaigns or anything like that? Man, no. Like, you're just not getting any response that anything is resonating with the folks that are coming into treatment. They're not picking up on the messaging that's getting out there. So I think, like, you got a long way to go before you can realistically say that the American public understands to the depths that I think we all want them to, what a gambling responsibly movement really looks like. So I think one of the things that we've had, you and I, Sean, and we've had a conversation recently, it was 2 days ago. You guys work with Connectify. You guys work really heavy on industry side, inside of industry, working with B2B clients that are operators, and all this language and this name, these naming conventions make sense, right? For me, they make sense to me because I also work with you guys, and I also work with gaming operators, and I also work with advocacy groups. But when you're talking about folks that are out there in recovery, or folks that are actively going through treatment, right? The older generation that's been through recovery for a while, sure, they get it because it's close to them and they've gone through recovery and they can understand it. But for this new generation that's coming through, and for these folks that are going through a treatment journey right now, it's their education is not there yet. And I think that's really important to point out. Like, when we say responsible gambling to a 23-year-old who has come in for any sort of treatment plan, like, the terms responsible gambling don't resonate. Not yet.
Of course.
Yeah, it's an interesting phrase. Over here in the UK, they've basically started to ban it. It's now safer gambling, right? Responsible gambling is, that's like version 2.0. Now we're on like version 5. It's interesting. It's a journey, right? And I think it's a journey. And all of this just has to be brought back to, like, how do you create better access to care, to the right kind of care, to the right kind of treatment population that understands them and can meet the person where they are. And that's the really important thing, is like meeting a person where they are and not always using terms like gamble responsibly. And a lot of times it reinforces stigma, right?
Yeah, I really like how you're talking about this journey. And it's like the industry, from my perspective, like, we work on AML issues. We're really deep in these compliance departments. And a lot of the responsible gaming is housed now. It's like moving towards these compliance departments, these risk management departments, because they're already monitoring player behavior, right? So it's, and they're already investigating things. So it's a natural fit for them to extend to monitor in different ways and to receive information from customer service agents and other indicators that are coming in, and then be able to like make an assessment from an investigative standpoint. But a lot of times I feel like the industry in this evolution, they're grasping at straws in a way on what happens next, right? I was at this trade show yesterday, and there's a really good question presented to the panel I was on. And it was like, if a problem gambler comes into a casino and you have eyes on him, and there's like hard indicators that you could have to start identifying that there's an issue, right? And then what are those identifiers first, like for an online player? And are there any? And how do you even identify them in the first place? From a technology perspective, my natural inclination is to think about risk scoring and all these different factors using data science and all this other stuff. But even, I would love to get your opinion on that. But secondly, once you identify them, the question was like, what do you do? We talk about self-exclusion a lot. There's debates on national self-exclusion lists versus operator by operator. There's all these things going on. But one really astute observer during that trade show that posed this question just asked, what if someone doesn't want to admit they have a problem yet? And so one thing that I love about what you're doing is like the whole medical side of it, the whole player behavior side. I would love to hear about your vision. You're talking about like telehealth gaining traction in the US, sure. And stats 20%. What is telehealth? What does that look like? What is your vision for kind of connecting the behavioral health community in with gaming operators and operationalizing this?
Yeah, it's a broad topic and I think a broad vision that has got some real fine points that I think everybody, I think it's important topics. Like, so you just asked a lot of things. So
yeah,
some of the stuff that stuck out to me was, it's really common when I attend the trade shows as well, that you're basically having the same conversation over and over. And like, we've had it, I've only been in this industry for 6 years, and I swear to God, we're still having the same conversation we were having 6 years ago. And that's so often, I think it's just history repeating itself, because globally, like when you look at gambling in a legal framework globally, and you look at regulators across the globe, right? You have some groups that are a little farther ahead than others, right? But you don't really genuinely, in my opinion, you don't really genuinely have something that's, this is world class on how we regulate this industry to keep every consumer as safe as we can possibly make it. And this is all of the answer. It doesn't exist, right? I think you see these attempts made at what consumer protections look like or what better policy looks like. And then basically when one goes, two or three more follow suit. And then all of a sudden it becomes, all right, this is going to be industry standard. And then across the globe, you see a bastardization of an attempted adoption of these types of things that are form fit to whatever that sort of local society is, you know, whatever they're governed by, be it a constitution or whatever their laws are. And so you get into some interesting interpretations of things that have been tried in other places. And yet, like, everybody just continues to bang on around the same things. And like, the thing in the States is, what you hear folks continue to bang on, right, is, okay, we need one hotline. We need one hotline. The hotline has to be answered all the time, right? We need to stop the confusion. There doesn't need to be 25 hotlines. Right? We need one hotline that everybody can answer, right? And where a lot of times the conversation stops is, what happens when somebody calls that hotline? What needs to be there when somebody answers that phone? And like, we have this conversation that it's only half of the conversation, right? Like, hotlines serve a purpose. Don't get me wrong. Hotlines save lives. Absolutely. Hotlines are a form of communication that so many people like to reach out through in order to get help, right? But we live in a day and age where kids, which I don't know how old everyone is on this. I'm 40. It's weird to say, but anything under 25 to me is a child, right? So anything under 25 is all communicating on their device. They're doing all of their business on their device. Hell, I would be surprised if half of them even knew how to dial an old rotary phone. Like, I would be really shocked if they could even, we showed it to them and they knew what it was in a lot of cases. So we have to be smarter with the way that we think about reaching folks and have a bigger conversation at a national level that says, listen, we are learning so much about telehealth. We are learning so much about telehealth ecosystems. We are learning so much about creating centers of excellence for specific diseases and organizing them rooted in telehealth triage process that gets folks to doctors faster for specialties that are required, as opposed to thinking in old school fashion that says, okay, my heart doctor is over here, my kidney doctor is over here, and my colon doctor is over here, and I have to go see all three of them in order to get cleared to do this particular procedure. And I can't get all three of those procedures on, or I can't get all three of those appointments on the same day because they're spread out over a 60-mile radius. And the closest opportunity I have to get them bundled together is spread out over a 2-month period. That is a very traditional, fragmented way of experiencing healthcare in the States. And we can do better. We can do a lot better because tele allows us to build those systems where we're connecting so many of the specialties in one place and routing the individual through tele options much faster. And that is where we need to focus efforts. A combined ecosystem, right, that says, like, I have ideas in my head on where to go. And I think a lot of this is very much going to be learning based. And the thing that I find extremely exciting about what's going on in the States right now is that there is an appetite to figure out what to do in this space. What do you do with the person when they are identified? I think it's being driven by genuine curiosity of, we know we're going to hear this more and more. And so who's working on this and what does this potentially look like? I think it's also being driven by some regulator activity that's bringing some requirements in that strategic plans be submitted every year on how you're going to interact once you know that person is having a problem and what you're going to provide them. I think that's extremely important. And I think that'll drive a lot of innovation in the space and carry this conversation forward for years and years to come. And I think more states are going to get in line with that idea of thinking. But I think what's really important is, okay, casinos got the opportunity to do warm handoffs where you can get them directly. Let's just say hypothetically, responsibility, the line is drawn at, we scheduled them for an appointment, or mm-hmm. we got them into an assessment and got them the information that they needed in order to make a decision. Okay, right. Fine. So let's say that we move the bar. That's the new goal, is we're going to try to create an environment on the operator side where, you know, our customer service agents have options to deploy to get folks where they need to go without just giving them a phone number and saying, thank you, have a nice day.
Sure. Yeah.
So if we can create that environment, then on the other side of it, for the care element, I can create everything else. And that's not arrogance. That's just simply understanding how to organize a care practice with a bunch of different specialties that are important to a person with a gambling problem and housing them in a way that we over time will be able to understand how they interact with and build better care models based off of what they're responding to in real time. So you got to start covering off everything that they need, right? A lot of gamblers come with comorbidities. That's just the way that it is. That's the way that a lot of disease works. There's another conversation that I think is worth having, although it's a harder conversation to have. Like, America has a massive mental health issue, like a massive mental health issue, right? Like 1 in 4 Americans, according to the American Psychiatric Association, is walking around dealing with any mental illness, right? That's a lot of folks, right? Now, we have on average in the United States, or I won't even say on average, last year, I believe, and somebody go fact check me on this one, but I think it was somewhere around 160 million Americans admitted to gambling within the 12-month period, ballpark. Right. So that's about half of the country. That's about half of the country, half of the population of the United States placed a wager of some sort, either in a casino or in an app last year. If you have a quarter of the population that's walking around with any mental illness, and you have half of the country playing under your entertainment, you have a problem that's walking around underneath your nose that you don't necessarily know. And right. When gambling starts to go a little haywire on an individual, it's the dopamine agonists taking over, like your reward system, your internal reward system that says, this is a good thing because it makes me feel good, starts to go into hyperdrive, and it starts to basically turn folks who are going to become addicted to gambling into problematic gamblers. That okay. dopamine drive will completely override all of your senses, all of your logic, and it will capture you and it will not let go.
Yeah.
So when you have the opportunity to identify that, and like part of what we talked about on that webinar that we did a couple of days ago, Sean, was like, when you have the opportunity to identify what we perceive to be markers of harm, what is really unknown in this space is, how does that translate to the person's mental health state? And I think like one of the points I was trying to drive home on that one, and I'll drive it home on this one. Like, there's no amount of AI, there's no amount of machine learning, there's no amount of behavioral analytics that we're going to pick up in a data set that is going to replace an actual therapist or an actual psychiatrist sitting down with the individual, going through all of the mental health diagnostics and getting a good, firm feeling and understanding of whether or not this is well and truly an addiction. You're not going to replace that with any kind of algorithm that you're going to place on. You're going to get indicators, which means that an investigation needs to happen and questions need to take place. But you're never going to be able to diagnose, and you're certainly never going to be able to treat. That's a firm. Look, we can do a lot with AI. All right. Can we replace the human touch when it comes to caregiving and bringing people on a care journey? I don't think so. Right.
I think it's such a great point, Dan. I think one thing that I've really loved about this software journey that we've been on is partnering technology, advanced technology with humans, right? Yeah. Human investigators, right? And as you merge those things together, where technology is like immediately identifying signals and risks, and then humans are assessing those and investigating those and making decisions, that's a really powerful combination, right? One thing it seems like I'm hearing from you that sounds really intriguing, and it's one of the reasons I think it brought our organizations together, is that there's like a next step in this evolution, right? Setting up care centers, like actual medical, mental health care centers, and then merging them with folks at the casinos, right? That are identifying risk, and there can be like a handoff, right? For like mental care, right? To get players like in the right place, instead of just clicking a button saying I'm gonna self-exclude, or just calling a hotline and then having that go into a black hole. There's actually a handoff to like a mental care facility that can do player outreach and help the player along their journey to recovery.
And yeah. There's a couple other things of what you said, Daniel, that I really want to pull out of there that I found interesting. One, you talked about how so much of the focus in the conversations in the past few years, you've heard the same conversation happen over and over with the hotlines, right? How do we get a unified hotline? And there's other conversations that I see happen over and over. And one of them's like a unified self-exclusion list, right? And it makes me wonder, and I think it gets to your points of, are we necessarily having the right conversation? Because if you talk about a unified self-exclusion list, don't get me wrong, I don't think it's a bad thing. But I think as an industry, we've been playing defense, especially with media blitzes and things like that, that the self-exclusion list really, that helps, I think, protect the casino a little more. Because theoretically, the customer, they can find an offline bookie. They can find a gray market online operator if they really need to, if they really want to feed that addiction. And one of the other things you said that kind of ties into this is moving the bar of where the casinos help out and eventually hand off. And would love to dive a little more into how do we help move that bar? And do you see that bar moving actively right now in terms of, we're not just cutting them off, but how do we get them into the first step of that care cycle, whether it's a transition to another platform, whether it's providing tools and what that looks like?
Yeah, great questions again. So I'll try to answer part of the first question there, which was around self-exclusion. And then we'll dig more into what environments look like where you can hand off players in a little bit more of a seamless fashion and moving the bar. I have interesting visibility on exclusion from the way it's managed over here in Europe and in the UK versus the way that it's managed over in the United States, which I imagine with you guys having so much visibility on what's going on in Canada, I would imagine it's probably managed a bit different in Canada as well. Is that safe to say? Because I don't know much about self-exclusion in Canada.
So I think self-exclusion in Canada, yeah, you're still having a similar issue if we talk about self-exclusion. I think at the province level, you're finding some kind of unity, but every province is so much different. The way they even have gaming operators between their conduct and manage agreements is so much different. So it's still a pretty fragmented process, yeah. I would say, overall.
I think OLG does like a good job, and it's something that they care a lot about, and they do have processes. So I will give a shout out to OLG and how they're managing it, and IGO as well. But at the same time, even them, they're pretty open and they're pretty public about exploring better ways and iterating on this to make it more frictionless. And we've heard from people like just in cabs and stuff in Canada talking about how it's like a multi-step process and there's technology process. And then sometimes you just give up. Right? You're like a player, and if it's not one click, then you're just, I'll do it later. And then you don't, right?
Pretty much.
So yeah. I think there's improvements to be made across North America, really across the world. But if we're talking about Canada and the US, there's improvements to be made. But I think there's an eagerness to make those, right? Gaming organizations are reaching out to us. Payments companies are reaching out to us. There's a lot of different players, a lot of different types of organizations reaching out wanting to do something. And then you have big organizations like OLG and IGO up in Canada actively really investing heavily in this area. So I think it's just an evolution, in my opinion, like we've been talking about. And people are seeking for information and seeking for resources and trying to find the best path forward.
Yeah, I agree. It is all evolutionary with these topics, right? But some of the things that I see, like just as basics that probably need a little bit, they need different considerations. And it's controversial when I talk about these things. So if you end up cutting this part, it's fine. All right. But like over here, for example, if someone goes on a self-exclusion list and then they show up at a casino and they're caught, the operator's fined. The operator receives a fine for not having robust enough systems to prevent that person from getting through the door, right? When someone goes on a self-exclusion list in the United States and they get in through security and then are busted, their winnings are taken away if they have had any winnings, and they are charged potentially with trespassing and get a misdemeanor. So it is an they get charged with some sort of criminal status. I'm not sure if it's misdemeanor or felony. It's probably misdemeanor, but it is very much designed to protect the operator in the States. It's designed as a deterrence to keep the person from coming back on site. And the reason why that is problematic in the addiction world is because if you have a person who is battling an addiction, who succumbs to the addiction, and you throw them in jail every time that they succumb to the addiction, they just become someone who gets chewed up and spit out by the system over and over again, and they never get any rehabilitation. And I think that's a really important thing to talk about when you're talking about addiction and you're talking about people who actually need help, right? So I think one of the things that I don't, first of all, I'll say this, I don't think the UK does hardly anything right when it comes to gambling regulation, even though they love to tout themselves as being the world's leader in gambling regulation. But I think that they try. I think that they learn as they go. And I think there are things that are getting better while most things are still staying the same. Okay. But the long and short of it is it was recognized that public health systems have to be built to support this network of individuals that present with this problem, whether they show back up at the casino or whether they call GamStop or GamCare over here, right? It doesn't matter. They have to have access to resources. And so there's been attempts to invest in infrastructure over here through the national health system, through building phone lines that folks can get coaching and counseling, and just making screening more widely known amongst the medical community so that it's picked up on more, and doing a lot of work around destigmatizing the problem. When you're going to throw somebody in jail or potentially threaten them with charging them, and I think mainly like every casino is going to say, we're not charging them. Like it's an option. We've never deployed it, which I think is probably mostly true, but I can't be for sure. But like you're using it as a deterrent, which in a lot of ways reinforces the stigma around the addiction, right? You're being treated like a criminal, right? And this is just another point that keeps continuing to come up over and over again. When you're talking to folks in recovery, there's a lot of shame that they feel with this problem. There's a lot of guilt that they feel with this problem. And they're so afraid to talk about the problem because they feel like that shame and guilt is going to be bestowed upon them by everyone. Because a really common phrase is, what's wrong with you? Just put your hand back in your pocket. Seriously, stop it. You know what I mean? There's so much stigma that drives it because everybody affiliates this with a spending problem. Like mm-hmm. You can't manage your money. You didn't get your financial education in school. You don't know what you're doing. You're just like the next guy who's broke and can't figure out his how to manage his resources. And that conversation is still, it widely overrides conversation around how much of a mental health issue this can be for people. Not every gambler is an addict. Obviously, right? Like not every person that's on the platforms are dealing with a gambling addiction, right? That goes without say. Like 98 to 99% of folks that gamble never have a problem. But for that 1% that do, they really fall victim, if you will, to societal constructs around this subject, just basically demonizing their behavior and shaming them into a position where they're scared to death to even reach out and get help. And that's mainly because they feel like nobody's going to understand them. right? And that's, I think, why gamblers respond so well to gamblers and gambler counseling and gambling groups that understand what it's like and have been there before. I think that lived experience community is extremely important, and that outlet to be able to speak to gamblers that have gone through this is extremely important, because it's just it's a real good sort of immediate in your face. Like, you're not alone. You're not alone. There's tons of folks out there that are dealing with this, and they're all scared to death to pipe up about it for one reason or the other, but you have resources that you can talk to. So I'm going to bring this full circle, right? I think self-exclusion is a very controversial and interesting topic that is going to be explored in several ways over the course of the next several years. I think it's going to take some regulatory intervention, and I think it's going to take some legislative overhaul in order to get something in play that makes the most sense. And what that looks like, I don't know. Like, I still struggle with, like, over here, you got this whole conversation that says there's no silver bullet, right? There is no silver bullet. You have to use a layered approach because you have to protect yourself from multiple different angles, and one product can't solve all those problems. So, you know, there's a request if somebody comes in through GamStop, which is the national self-exclusion scheme for online, that you also download Gamban and that you also contact GamCare and start getting counseling going. Is that the most robust answer that we have to date? I don't know. Maybe. Can we do some thinking in the space and bring some innovation to it? Absolutely. And I think that's where we start getting into some interesting ideas. What does an ecosystem look like where you hand off a player and move that bar? And I think that some of the regulators are already starting to move that bar for us, which I think is why we have an opportunity to construct companies in this space that bring jobs and interest into this space and build out a nice, healthy, robust industry / economy built on understanding how to deliver better care and better resources to individuals that happen to fall into a gambling problem. And I think a very clear example is Colorado's regulations that kick in October, which are very simply, you're going to identify players, you're going to bucket them into categories, you're going to know that there's potential problems. Now that you know that there's potential problems, we want to know what you're going to do to intervene. We want you to lay out what your strategy is for communicating with them. Right? That is the first step of really someone saying, you have to go to the next level now, right? And you have to start thinking about what does go into that space. What does that space need? And as soon as you start getting two or three more to jump onto it, and it'll be the bigs that jump on it. Like, I'm going to guess Massachusetts will probably do something similar. Ohio will probably do something similar. Pennsylvania will probably do something similar. New York will probably do something similar. And then I think once you get that sort of core group there, everybody else is going to just follow. Nevada, of course. Like, Nevada, I say them like they're an afterthought sometimes, but in a lot of ways, like, the Nevada Council and the groups that come out of Nevada do some of the most, I think, innovative work and really progressing what the next level looks like and the next stage looks like for protections. So undoubtedly it'll come out of Nevada too. But, like, I really think you're starting to see regulators move the needle. New Jersey requires now we're going to categorize and risk score, right? Colorado says we're going to categorize and risk score. And now you have to give me a plan on what you're going to do when that person is obviously in distress, right? And so I think you're just going to keep seeing iterations of this hit. And I think, like, groups like us, and I say this with Connectify in mind with this, right? These are opportunities for us to innovate in that space hard and fast and give these operators what would be the first generation of answers on how to blend these tech products that blend monitoring and healthcare into one, into their environment where it can be part of their communication process with a player that they know that's in distress. Right. And then again, that just gives me and the Kindbridge team the opportunity to build a center of excellence with an abundance of resources and a really deep network of providers that stretch across psychiatry, psychology, counselors, coaches, medication management, inpatient, intense outpatient, like anything that you could possibly dream of that you need, gives us the opportunity to build that network across the country to connect all of the pieces and really just effectively own what would be a really clean routing system, right? If you can give a gambler all of the information that they need on where they need to go and then help concierge style land them where they need to go and then help them find the resources to cover the cost of doing it, like that, to me, that is whole person care when it comes to trying to help this individual get back on their feet and become a whole person again in a productive, constructive, lead a constructive life. So like, I think we have more opportunity now than we've ever had, ever, to really work on this subject and really make it, to me, it's about, this is, let me pause here and see if there's anybody else who wants to chime in on this. And then just remind me to come back to making a parallel between what happened in the mining industry in the US and the States in the 80s and what is going on with the researchers that are researching the subject now and the number of them that are close to retirement versus the number of them that are new and coming into the field. So somebody just remind me to come back to that.
So there's a couple pieces I want to really hammer through that I love that you brought up there. And I do want to jump to that. One is you started bringing in all of the other stakeholders in that part of the conversation. And I think that's such an important piece because if we don't mobilize every angle of this. And what I mean by that, right, is this can't all be the operators. It has to be the regulators. It also has to be the legislatures. And what that is, I don't exactly know yet where the legislators plug in, what that law becomes, how we create better public health options that I think need to help bridge some of that gap between that exclusion from the casino or dropping off from the casino and getting into the healthcare system. But bringing all of those pieces in, those three pieces, I would say, and then that fourth piece that you dovetailed it with at the end is us as suppliers. There is a real opportunity here. And I think there's probably ways that sure suppliers could cash in, make some great money on bringing in some like bare minimum tools to address these regulations. But gosh, there's so much opportunity to do something truly wonderful, something that truly changed the landscape of how we help these individuals who are struggling with gambling addiction. And to your point, I think we have to innovate at a hyper pace as we're starting to see regulators jump into the conversation more, make some requirements as how do we get ahead of this and create something that truly helps the conversation, truly helps these folks, so we don't get into a point, and I think it can happen with any industry, where regulators now have to overregulate, innovation gets stifled, and then maybe we miss our opportunity. And I think that would be a real shame if, as an industry, as regulators, as legislators, and as suppliers and technologists, we don't jump on this moment.
Yeah. And so I'll drive that point home. I think one of the delicate balancing acts that I've experienced in all of this is you have to be Switzerland across the board when you're talking about this topic, if you want to show progress, right? Like, you can't be an extremist that is one of the gambling is horrible, burn everything down, we shouldn't have it. You can't be an extremist the other way that says we should have absolutely no regulations and it should be wide open. You can't demonize any player that's involved in this. You can't take shots at advocacy groups for not doing the best that they can on the budgets that they've got. You can't take shots at operators for not knowing what they should possibly have learned from other markets, but they don't. Like, you can't take shots at regulators for not regulating fast enough or not thinking around the corner. There's so much information that is just now being produced that I think would help guide, that you have to be, in a lot of ways, a Zen master with this to try to bring all of the stakeholders together and show them the way, show them how this can be done in a way where it can be a very collaborative conversation and we can all step forward together. And I'll just give an example, but I won't name who. I was recently on the phone with someone from the industry, and it was an introduction call to Kindbridge. And I explained everything that we were doing and who we were and who we're working with, right? And it was this immediate wall of this is everything that we're doing. These are the groups that we work with in the States. It was very defensive, right? And I actually stopped them and I said, yeah, this doesn't have to be a defensive subject. We're all just trying to work towards a more innovative, more productive space with better consumer protections, right? I literally said to the guy, I don't give a shit what you're doing or what you're not doing right now. It matters to me what you're going to do next. That's it. Like everything that's out there to pick and choose from on what we've learned so far is some of it is mildly applicable to what we're about to learn with such a huge population having such easy access to sportsbook and soon iGaming.
I really like that point about learning, right? You made the research point earlier and also like these centers for care, right?
Yeah.
And as this matures, right? And it can mature quite quickly, right? Where you have clinics across the country or wherever they're located, serving problem gamblers, people with addictions, and then data, right? From the casinos to say, problem gamblers exhibit these trends. They do these types of things. There can be such a rich plethora of research and understanding that comes out of that.
That's
you can start like identifying these things sooner and helping people better, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's it. You can get to, and this doesn't just apply to casino either, right? But what I see, it's weird because a lot of people don't think of casino as a massive opportunity to have such a huge impact on mental health, right? But I see you got 160 million people who are showing up and you've got a huge portion of those that are arriving with a mental health issue, right? Mm-hmm. You've got an entertainment product that is inevitably going to tap into a dopamine reward system that will hijack some of them, right? And so you have opportunity to lend hand in the biggest problem that America is facing, which is the next generation of individuals that are coming up are dealing with more mental health crisis than we've ever dealt with before, period. Right. And that's not casino's fault. You know what I mean? Like, it's not right. Casino's fault, right? Does game design feed into the fact that we're going to hit dopamine systems and reward systems over and over again? Yes, game design is something that needs to be considered. But you have such a wide audience that's already showing up with a problem. And should some of the policies and procedures that operators are considering and deploying and their methods for attracting customers be reviewed and scrutinized and tightly regulated? Yes, they should. They should. It's a free market, right? And everybody's out there trying to get theirs. And that's the way that this market has worked since it opened, right? Does that mean that we shouldn't put bumpers on things just like we do at bowling alley for children? Yes, we should put bumpers on things, right? But at the end of the day, you have got a lack of data in the mental health community that is giving us any sort of indicator of what a healthy outcome looks like for a completely recovered individual, right? You can do it on knees. You can do it on brain surgery. You can do it on heart surgery. You can do it on amputations, right? You really struggle in the health space to get a good fix on what an individual suffering from a mental health issue, what a good recovery looks like for that person, right? And Tela can help solve that problem, right? Tela, which gives the individual access to the right kind of educational resources, connection to the right kind of peer support groups, connection to the right kind of counselors, connection to the right kind of coaches, connection to the right kind of recovery platform, the right kind of recovery community, right? All of these things that you can manage in a centralized system that's actually decentralized and allowed to operate from anywhere across the country, right? You can pick up more useful data, which will be used to create care models, which can be used to inform policy simply by doing good for the population. That is literally it. And that is the whole platform that I like to speak from. We have nothing but opportunity to really participate in solving a huge problem for folks across the US, right? Access to care. mental health issues that need addressing to reduce suicide attempts and reduce individuals that happen to die by suicide. And those are the things that the root that drive everything that I do. So I wanted to bring it back slightly. Like I did a research paper when I was in university on the decline of mining as an industry in the US and really what led to it, right? And what she had was back in the 80s, you had loads of mining schools across the country. And all of a sudden, mining became a relatively expensive operation and it became cheaper to do it elsewhere. And all of a sudden, a lot of these curriculums just started to disappear. And you ended up with a small handful of mining schools across the country that you could go to train our own people on how to manage mines, mining operations, mining exploration, all of it, right? And so you really started to shrink the workforce that could actually lead the way for building a strong, sustainable mining industry. And inevitably, what ended up happening over a series of years was all of the folks who had gone through school to be miners started to graduate out. They started to retire, right? And you have this huge gap between the next generation. And the next generation that was coming in was a lot of transplants. It was a lot of foreign workers because there weren't miners that were willing to step up and do the jobs. And you started getting younger and younger, and they're coming from different areas, and they had different safety protocols in each of these areas. And you had these old guard that wouldn't really train the individuals that were coming in for one reason or the other. And you had a ton of safety issues. Inevitably, what ends up happening, like the mining industry in the States shrinks. The mining industry in other locations across the globe booms. A lot of labor gets outsourced, and the United States shrinks its footprint and its total mining operations inside of the United States. When you look at research that's going on across this space, and when you look at people that are working in this space, it is really hard to attract talent on the RG side because it is not a very lucrative business to be in. So you get a lot of people with a lot of passion who have to work on tiny little budgets to try to make an impact in this space. And I think that's something that we have to change. I think we have a lot of people in this space that care deeply. I think we have a lot of people that are eager and interested in picking up the flag and carrying things forward. I think you have tons of researchers and tons of folks who have been in this industry for 40 plus years, who are eager to see things change, who are getting close to retirement if they're not already there, that are now witnessing all of this access, and they're witnessing lack of infrastructure to support, and they're desperate to see folks move into this space and really bring good quality, everything, solutions, products, innovation, research, all of it into the space to provide better consumer protections for this particular population. The only way we do that is if we actually make the jobs attractive in the space. The only way we do that is if we can all figure out that it's going to be more productive to work together and have fun solving this problem together.
Yeah, I love that. I love that point. And I really like your point about capacity and resources, right? We see this in other spaces of risk management a lot, right? Because it's a cost center. It doesn't add to the profitability of the company traditionally. And it takes a lot of human resources, right? Like big companies sink millions and millions of dollars into anti-money laundering, other aspects of risk management. They might have teams of up to 60 people, right? At fully baked with benefits, you're paying $90,000 a head for a non-manager position, just an analyst position. It's a massive load of money, right? And one thing that we've noticed with innovation is as we're deploying more effective tools, right, then you free up capacity, right? You're driving efficiency. Like some of our tools are like 6x productivity gains, 12x. You're driving this efficiency, but what you're doing is freeing up capacity. And then the organizations, they're not so much restricting budgets, but they're redeploying capital to do better things for their organization, right? Things that drive all kinds of value. Sometimes that's monetary value, but sometimes that's other aspects of value that help build their brand, right?
Yeah.
And so I think I can see that trend with responsible gaming. where you have these organizations that care very deeply about responsible gaming. Like MGM is a great example. You know, you go to these trade shows, people from BetMGM there, both MGM and BetMGM take it very seriously. A lot of these larger casinos do, and they dedicate resources to it. And what I've seen is when you look under the hood and you look at the operations, as we're getting deeper into the technology space and responsible gaming, it's very similar to the evolution of anti-money laundering, where you hire people and people have spreadsheets and people are using tools that just pre-exist, like a lot of the customer service tools like Salesforce and like Zendesk and similar tools like that, where they're not meant for responsible gaming. They're not meant to aggregate data in that way. So it's causing like you to hire a lot more people and to go through a lot more expense to try to address the basics, right? And so I think it's very attractive as we're talking about bringing all of these players together and we're talking about innovations. And part one piece of that is technology. We have this great opportunity right now where you can drive efficiency and help people get organized. And you can drive capability through data analytics and all these other things and connecting the player care community, like we've been having this conversation today, and streamlining seamlessly into the gaming operations, where you can free up capacity and resources, right? And they can redirect those resources into better player care, which helps build brand when you're talking from a business perspective, right? It helps them keep their player populations healthy and keep them playing and enjoying the games, building their brands. I think there's just, from what you're saying, like, just sounds like a huge opportunity and a similar evolution that you're seeing in this space as you are in other aspects of risk management from a casino's perspective.
100%.
And I'd like to key in on one of those last words there, and that's opportunity. And I love the way you addressed that, Daniel. And I think as a conversation and a narrative in the industry, I'd love it to change that way, because I think there's such an aspect of playing defense right now. But to your point, you do have a quarter of the population or whatever it is that already has some type of mental health issue. Nearly half of them, I think like 46, 45% are coming and playing at our casinos. And so there's a lot that's out of our control there that is already at play. And so I think just we have that ability to remove that stigma. And I know media creates some of that stigma and we do get on defense, but we wipe all that away as we have these conversations with regulators, with legislators. There's a huge group of the population that's coming to us, coming to where we are, spending time with us as an industry. So there is this unique opportunity that I think a lot of industries wouldn't necessarily have. And we have, I feel like, a pretty unified industry in how we work together on these topics, that there's a massive opportunity to make an actual significant change. And I think it's great if we can switch from that mindset of defense to forget what's been said. Let's not put blame, whether it's operator, regulator, legislator. Let's capitalize on something monumental that's in front of us.
100%. The only thing I want to make sure that we don't do with statements on along these lines is no operator should use it as an excuse, knowing that there's a portion of the population that's sick, to not beef up their operations in the way that they think about the problem. And I think that's extremely important to point out is, look, because a lot of folks are walking around and they're struggling right now, that is not an excuse to not invest in this type of thinking, in these types of programs, and this type of innovation. If anything, what I would say is it should be a warning shot. And what I mean by that is the headlines aren't going to stop coming. You're not like Paul reading off all of those headlines on that webinar the other day was just like, that's the tip of the iceberg, because the U.S. is so nascent in its journey on this. You haven't even begun to see what bad looks like yet. You're not even close. You are at the very beginning of this, right? And if it follows any sort of similar pattern to what the UK followed, it's going to get a hell of a lot worse before it gets better, right? And every single person that's on your platform that is a higher risk profile is a person that could potentially end up in a very damaging headline with a very hefty fine on the end of it, right? So we all have a lot of work to do, right? There's a ton of work to do in this space. And I think collaboration is key to doing it successfully, but we just have to make sure, right? Like, I think everyone can have a dialogue at a very healthy level around this topic that says, listen, there is opportunity to do a lot of good here. There's opportunity to have a lot of impact. There's a lot of opportunity to train an entire new generation on what care needs to look like and what customer service needs to look like for folks like this and what programs need to look like to help us identify issues that need to be investigated and bring so much transparency in the space and so much innovation and product into this space that really helps to solve long-term what has always been the biggest issue, which is access to really good, high-quality resources for these folks.
Daniel, it's been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for coming on. We really loved having you, and it was incredibly educational.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. And anytime, I look forward to many more of these conversations as the relationship develops and we get deeper into solving real problems.
Thanks again for joining us today on Connectify Conversations. You can support our show even more by leaving us a rating wherever you download your podcast and by sharing Connectify Conversations with gaming industry leaders like yourself. Visit Connectify.com to learn more. That's KINECTIFY.com. Until our next conversation, always remember to minimize risk and maximize your efficiency.